space, the final frontier, and apparently the final resting place for Starfleet's deepest, darkest secrets. Welcome back to Hit or Miss Star Trek, where we dissect the good, the bad, and the downright controversial from the Trek universe. Today, we're diving headfirst into the long-awaited, highly classified Star Trek Section 31. Michelle Yeoh is back, black leather is in, and moral ambiguity is the order of the day. So the big question is, does this film belong in the shadows, or does it earn its place in Starfleet history? Oh boy, I am your host, Captain Mike, and I'm joined by our very own Elite Alpha team for this mission. First of all, we have our returning sci-fi queen, a force of nature who knows Trek inside and out, Nita!
Hello, everyone. Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. You're all prepared to talk Section 31 and maybe get a little bit of venting and closure?
Yes, I absolutely need an emotional day here with this.
That's awesome. And joining us on this classified operation are two brave souls who boldly stepped in at the last minute to lend their expertise. Firstly, mission specialist Justin. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing? You okay?
Oh, well, I am pretty excited to have my say on this particular issue.
I think that's probably true of all of us. And finally, we're joined by our Starfleet Special Envoy, Lieutenant Mary. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Yes, you can be the Rachel Garrett in this particular group of people.
Oh, I wouldn't
goodness. Be a shit show because we're not talking about it just yet, but you know.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
If it helps, I thought she was one of the only redeeming characters, so I don't know.
Oh, actually, I completely agree. I'm sure we'll get there. I agree, actually. One of the only ones that was actually written, but never mind. So, yeah, as I say, thank you both of you for stepping in last minute. You both deserve medals, but since I don't have those, you'll have to settle for an enthusiastic thank you.
So, get some medals, buddy.
Appreciate it.
No, you know what? We need medals for this one, buddy. So get to it.
Sorry, they were lost in the mission. They were on the garbage scale. So anyway, let's break it down.
Utopian ethics that are keeping me from demanding anything. So that's
anyway, as I say. We are going to.
I have a little Ferengi in me, so yeah, I want compensation.
Well, I don't have any gold pressed latinum, definitely.
Oh, this is awful. This is just awful.
Man. Safe to say, we're all going to have opinions on this movie, and if you're a fan of it, probably don't want to tune in. just, you know, we're going to try and be fair, or at least I am, and look for some positives. But
this stretched my empathy to the max in trying to find the good points.
Yes, I'm with you, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a Sherlock Holmes-esque mission trying to look for it, but maybe I found one or two. We'll see. We're going to break it down anyway, and as this is one of our full movie reviews, we'll be foregoing the usual intro and hit or miss sections in order to devote our full time to analysing if Section 31 is a hit, a miss, or something more classified. We'll start, as always, by asking, as spoiler-free as possible, when you first saw this, which is going to be pretty obvious, I think, what were you expecting, and what was your initial impression after that first watch? And I'll come to you first, Nita. I'll go clockwise.
Okay, so, you know, when I first heard about it, I was very excited. I love Michelle Yeoh. I love Giorgio, the character she plays. And I am a fan of the idea of Section 31. I think that, you know, all governments have spies, so to speak, right? And Section 31 operates within that kind of air of being a spy. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, only for those countries or worlds they're investigating, right? I think that they didn't really, it was a disappointment. It was very disappointing. It was not at all what I personally expected, but I didn't get anything better than what I expected. And it was so below the margin of what I expected that it was almost sad. I was so sad at this movie, just not at all. It was very disappointing.
That's fair enough. And I presume you must have watched it when it went live on Paramount Plus.
Yes, I did. I watched it when it first came out. You know, I was very excited about it. And I say, you know, at the end of the movie, I said, okay, maybe I'm tired. right? Because I work long hours. So maybe I'm tired. And
it's never good when you have to look for excuses as to why you didn't like something.
Exactly, exactly. So I did give it, you know, a day. And then I said, all right, on the weekend, I'm going to be more alert. I'm going to watch this. But no, that didn't change. It hurt more the second time. it really was painful.
Oh, dear. Well, you never know. We might get a more positive response from Mary. Spoiler alert, I know we won't because before we started recording. Mary, when did you first see this and what were your initial thoughts?
I watched it the day it came out because I don't know why. Sometimes I'm not a day stuff comes out kind of person. But when I went in to watch it, I had just gotten home from work. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this one a shot. From the stuff that I had seen, the press it was getting, I was not optimistic. When they had the interview with the guy, the mech guy, what was his name again?
Oh, Rob Kaczynski is the actor's name.
Yeah, so they had an interview with him, and he had said something about people like he didn't want people to, I forget exactly how he put it, but it wasn't a positive thing coming from an actor in the movie. And I was like, if you think that the people are going to act away, you're probably right. If your gut reaction is that the fandom isn't going to like this because it's really different, you're probably right. And here's the thing about that. Like, I want Star Trek to try new things. I want them to try new stuff. Like, I thought Prodigy as an experiment in children's programming was an excellent thing. I thought that Lower Decks in trying out animation period, animation, because the animated series, obviously, but like really giving it a good effort instead of, cheaping out on it like the animated series was, although I do like the animated series. I have been on here before saying that.
Oh, yes, we've reviewed at least one of them.
Yeah. But I want them to try new things. And so I was hoping that maybe, other people, who watched it were just, like more picky about it. And then I'm like, no, Mary, you know who you are. You're not too picky. And then when I watched it and I was like, this is actually really not good. And I felt like it was a bunch of different movies trying to be one movie and it didn't make sense. So yeah, that's where I landed.
So you didn't love it either. So yeah,
I did.
It's strange. Actually, you mentioned the actor Rob Kaczynski, and all of you guys aren't from the UK, so you won't know this. He's actually really famous as Sean Slater from EastEnders in the UK, which I guess would be the equivalent to you guys as like somebody that stars in Days of Our Lives.
Know EastEnders. I have watched EastEnders, and I knew who he was. Thank you very much.
I apologize.
You know I'm all up in the British TV. You know that.
I didn't, but okay. I do now.
I feel bad for the guy because I don't think that, like, I don't think any of the actors were not talented.
I agree. I am prepared to launch into at least a couple.
I am ready to hear it too. I'm ready to hear it too. But I think, for the most part, like no one. Well, okay. There's one person. There's one person that I can think about, but most of them, he was not one of them. Who I thought, wow, that is a terrible actor. I didn't think that about him. So, anyways. Yes, we can move fair on enough. From my initial thoughts.
That's fair enough, Justin. Yeah. So Justin,
what about you? So I had a method to my madness when I watched this. I don't read reviews. I don't, I just try to watch something and see it for what it is. And so the first time I watched it, I tried very hard to shut even my brain off and just take it. If you give a lot of ifs, you can find a not terrible TV pilot in it. But as a Star Trek movie, it was hard. And so the second night I watched it critically, you know, trying to pick apart why I didn't like it, what parts bothered me, etc. And yeah, it was extremely wanting in a lot of categories, I would say, is a fair assessment. you know, as for like, I could certainly point to lots of good things in it. It's not terrible in the sense that, you know, there are good moments that actually are fairly Trek, but as a Star Trek piece overall, as a movie by itself, as a TV pilot, it was eh. Like, yeah. So yeah, that would be about the thought process I went through when I watched it. You know, it's, as I said, I think earlier before we were recording, any Trek is better than no Trek. But agreed. Sometimes that's all you can say.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. Yeah. I am so with you right there.
Well, in fairness, you know, my ideals on this with Trek, like, I had never really liked Section 31 to begin with. So, I mean, probably be a fair point to start with, you know. But I actually was hoping that this would be a chance for them to change my mind and redeem that. And show that, yes, it is necessary to have these spies who do terrible things. And instead we got this.
Yeah, so, I'm with you.
Yeah, it was not about spies who do terrible things. It was Guardians of the Galaxy Star Trek.
It was.
Tried really hard, but it right, wasn't that either.
I agree with Nita, that. Mm-hmm. Where I like Section 31 as well, I found their storylines in Deep Space Nine to be intriguing. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, there's these people. I mean, we don't like them, but maybe they're necessary. I mean, maybe they're exactly. necessary. I don't know. But and so I was, again, you know, like when I was looking at this movie, I was like, oh, it's going to be like Black Ops stuff. Like, you know, and then it wasn't. It was like hokey jokey mid-Marvel movie. And I don't know.
Yeah, it really was I agree with Mary. It did have that whole galaxy, you know, Guardian of the Galaxy feel to it, which there's nothing wrong with Galaxy, Guardian of the Galaxy,
like,
but
movies.
It's not Star Trek. That's no. The bottom line.
I would make a different analogy to that, because I think Guardians of the Galaxy is good, and at least they're heroes. So I think when I was watching it, I was like, this is actually the first Suicide Squad movie. That's exactly what it is. It's, you know, introduce them with all flash and substance and style and do nothing and have them fight faceless people, and at the end you're just left thinking, I used to like those characters. Do you know what I mean? In comic book form, and what have you done? But yeah, it's something.
Even the villain in Section 31 was a joke.
I didn't mind the main dude, but
I feel like the main villain there was a complete and utter joke. I felt that they just minimized a Federation enemy into some sort of comic relief that didn't work. It really? Was just wasn't.
I don't think he was particularly funny.
It wasn't funny. That's the thing. I think that that's maybe what they were trying to do with this villain, because he was so physically tiny, and they were trying.
Oh, you
to
mean
be
that
like,
guy? Actually,
yeah, okay, that's well. What I'm saying. Like, were they trying? My question to the universe is: were they trying to be funny, making him so tiny and so evil? Because if you were, maybe in concept that's a good idea, but it just did not work. You did not write that well. It was not.
I think that was
well
just. Well, first of all, that's not the main villain. I was thinking of Sag.
but
a movie
I
so subversive, we can't even agree on who the
villain
is.
We can't
was.
Even
it's
agree
a
with the villains. A masterpiece of disaster. That's what that was.
As far as the Nanakins go, I just think it's a terrible idea. I don't know who came up with it or whether they thought it was clever or smart or whatever, but they're an abysmal idea and they're not funny. If they're intended to be, they really just aren't.
Yeah. No. You know what's also interesting to me is that in Deep Space Nine, Section 31 played a particular role, right? And it was very clearly defined as to have their secrecy, right? And the need for their secrecy. And then you have it in Discovery, where they give you a little bit more on Section 31, but not too much. And it was a serious organization. You know, it's a serious branch off of, you know, the Federation, quote unquote, government, right? And then you have this movie where you're thinking you're going to get more of that development, more of the history, you know, because you could do so much with this idea. But they didn't. They made it about Giorgio, which wouldn't have been bad had they not called it Star Trek 30, Section 31, and they would have given her a better, more redeeming story, because I feel like the fact that she is villainous is that what makes her great. And I think that taking that away from her just redefines the character, makes her someone else. So I
didn't like that either.
See, I had a
total. We like her because she's a badass.
I've got to disagree. I think
I hate that movie. Yeah. Sorry, but right from the beginning of the movie, they tried to show, oh, she's the murder queen of the murder planet, and there's all these murderous people there that think that murder's great. And from there, it was just more of this trying to, you know, define her character. And they made her so ambiguous that it just, like, none of it hit. None of it.
They just don't know how to write a villain, that's the thing, because they immediately go arch. Like, fair enough, she's, if you want to try and do a story about redeeming Space Hitler, then do it. But don't have her, like, sitting eating eyeballs in a bar. Like,
ooh, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They confused everyone. You thought that they were going to keep her the villain, like her mentality and personality. But then she's doing something that could be considered a non-villainous type of behavior.
I mean, if it's, I'd rather see a redemption arc if it's going to be done. I felt very confused as to
what they were trying to do with her arc. It was all over.
I don't think that's. I mean, I think if you watch it from Discovery onwards, it's quite clear that it's a redemption arc. To go through all of that and have that kind of like we're slowly dealing with the redemption, and it's not a fast process, but you know you're going step by step, and then you end the movie with, oh yes, I get it, you might kill us at any time. Oh, for fuck's sake!
I've gone nowhere. Yeah, that was so womp womp.
I was like, what? That's what I'm saying. It's very confusing what they were trying to do. What is it exactly you're presenting about her? The whole movie had nothing to do with Section 31 other than a group of people that were all from Section 31 who, you know, she got recruited into do this mission, but the mission really was about her and ultimately. And it felt very convoluted.
See, I don't mind that it was about Georgia when I expected it to be, because it was always kind of... It was marketed as a Michelle Yeoh vehicle and a Giorgio movie, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of fine with it. But even to your point, though, of like, oh, it was a bunch of Section 31 agents, because who else would be working with the evil emperor? But even then, they threw in a Starfleet officer, which should have been great, but it just ends up confusing because, like, Starfleet don't know about Section 31.
Exactly. Right. Thank you.
That whole part was like, what? I thought we didn't know they existed.
And when they brought in officers, confusing. They did it themselves. They didn't ask Starfleet.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And Starfleet like certainly didn't have, like, you know, Starfleet didn't have operational authority over them where they could override them, because otherwise, the whole Dominion sort of we infected them with a virus thing would be redundant, because then you'd have Starfleet mm-hmm. going, don't do that. And they go, oh, we've got to do what you said, and, you know, because, I mean, the writers have said they would have dealt with that and explained how they, you know, within the space of 40 or 50 years, they go from being known to being the ultimate secret that nobody can know about. But it's that just reeks to me of like the Discovery spore drive problem, where it's like, yes, we're going to write a way out of it, but we don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
This will be easy.
I think that sometimes these writers forget that as fans of Star Trek, we know all of Star Trek probably better than they do. And when they make what we would consider an era or a canonical era, we see it and we're going to point it out. Like, we're not going to not see this. That's like changing a character. They used to do this a lot in the 80s, where you would watch a sitcom and all of a sudden the character who played, you know, so-and-so was now played by a different actor. And people were never told what happened. And then you expect the people not to point that out, not to notice that, ridiculous. Of course they're going to notice it. They're going to see it. And Trekkies see things. We watch with intention. So, yeah, we are going to notice these flaws. Yes, that character, that Starfleet officer should have never been a part of that. She's either Section 31 or she's not, because Starfleet, as a whole doesn't really know, and those who know don't acknowledge Section 31. And it's so high up on the ranks that it just doesn't make sense.
I mean, I'm not picky, and I kind of like that the character was there because, like Justin, I think she was one of the better characters. But at least try and give some kind of explanation that she was Starfleet intelligence. Don't be just like, oh, I was a science officer on a random ship and I got... Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. Well,
why are they sending such a baby officer to go see what
she's a chaos goblin? This is why
I actually hated Rachel Garrett. She was like probably my second most disliked character. I really did not like her.
I did not like her either.
Because she can't figure out what she wants to be, and I know that, you know, we have the chaos goblin thing for her, but that was so weird and so forced that there was no redeeming it for me. But when she came, you know, they have her come in, you're like, that's a Starfleet officer, and she's like a baby one at that. That doesn't make any sense, because you should have someone who's like, I don't know, battle hardened or something like that, who could come in.
Well, why a science officer? Why not a tactical officer?
Because she's like there. She's like, I'm here to make sure you guys don't act up for Starfleet. And they're like, she had no authority whatsoever. She commanded no authority as a person. And Starfleet had no authority over them anyway. So, like, from everything that we've known.
Yes, and the idea of Section 31 is that they don't operate under Federation rules. So having her there didn't make any sense. I'm with you. I'm with Mary on this. It's boys against girls today. I really feel
it. It's okay.
I didn't really mind. At least I like that we had somebody there that was like, look, if you murder, the whole weight of Starfleet will, you know, put you out of the shadows and come for you and whatever else. And it was nice to have a little bit of morality. You know what I mean?
But I wanted the movie to be morally ambiguous. Like, I wanted it to be that way. I wanted it to be dark, and it was
So now you're going into the philosophy of why you're a Star Trek fan, right? Some people have different views.
Actually, no. I really love the positivity and the utopian part of it all, you know?
The problem is that it was too dark for, I mean, myself included. I didn't like that it was just, there was barely a hint of optimism or happiness in it. Yeah. And it was just very bleak. And I mean, kind of said about when I first watched it, my first impressions were, as I said off air, like when I first came away from it, whether it was just because of Stockholm Syndrome or whatever, I was like, well, given the reviews, that wasn't as bad as it potentially could have been. And, you know, on the plus side, they didn't, to my mind, ruin the character of Rachel Garrett, and nobody did anything horribly illegal, and there wasn't any kind of, you know, mass crime that you have to try and cover up or whatever. And I was like, it could have been worse, I'm sure. But then, you know, on a rewatch, it kind of falls apart. But I was so excited for so many things that the film didn't do. Because, like you, I watched it on the day it came out, Mary, and I was like, well, I don't like Section 31. I don't like this version of Giorgio. I'd be happy for her to be redeemed if you're going to do that. But I don't like this kind of, you know, we don't know how to do a villain. We'll just make her Frankenstein or whatever kind of thing that they're doing. And but I was like, oh, but you've said it in 23, 24 or whatever. So that's really interesting to me because it's the lost era of Star Trek. So maybe if I go in and watch this movie, I'll see like spaceships we've never seen or characters we haven't, or we'll see Starfleet uniforms of the era and see how the universe looks at a time that we haven't seen it. And when I watched the movie, I was like, this could have been set at any time. You could tell me this was set at the same time as Discovery or the same time as Strange New Worlds, and I wouldn't question it because it's just so generically any time in space. Mm-hmm. That, like, what a disappointment, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, from the beginning, I thought it was a pretty good ad to get the 1980s A-team to come and fix things. Like, that's what it seemed like in all the graphics and what have you.
I like that. The 1980s A-team. Yes.
I can only pronounce Sam Richardson as the Camelot just going, let's modify the garbage cow. You get me on no damn starship, fool.
I pity the fool.
Oh yeah, disappointing, you know, in the beginning, just for a lot of reasons, and like you said, this whole lost era that they could have explored instead where they went. Oh my goodness. It's there's so many things to say. It's almost you get lost in it.
There is. We're kind of getting lost because I do have a behind the scenes section to start us with, but I do want to say firstly before I do that this is a very nerdy kind of thing that not necessarily everybody would have kind of picked up on. But one of the other reasons I was excited is that I know the writers of this, Bo Yun Kim and Erica Lippold, because they've written some of my favorite episodes of Discovery, particularly the ones that deal with like Saru and his Kelpian homeworld and stuff like that. So a lot of season two episodes around that area. I think they're really good writers. So I was like, oh, they did the story, but not the teleplay. So maybe there'll be some good character stuff. I can only assume they wrote some of the decent, like, JoJo stuff that I enjoy, because the rest of it just has no hint of them. And, yeah, likewise, the director is Olatunde Osunsanmi, who directed a lot of Discovery. Sorry if I butchered the name. And we were just praising his work on the Discovery finale when we reviewed it not that long ago, because I think that was fantastic. But it's just like, I don't know whether it was a mandate or whether he just decided this was a different style or what, but it's like he lost every bit of skill and subtlety and nuance that he has as a and just thought, let's throw every trick we can at it. Let's do crash zooms. Let's do, cutaways. Let's do flashbacks and flash forwards, imaginary things. Let's have flashing lights everywhere. Let's have people bickering. And it's just like, oh, God, just don't.
Don't forget the three quarters of a heist movie.
But it's, I mean, it turns into this. This is probably a reference you won't get, but even the introduction, it's like it turns into the TV show Hustle. It's just like, this is Muscle, this is the honey trap, this is this character, and it's just zooming in on them one by one. Again, it's a bit Suicide Squad-y, I guess, as well. But it's just like,
I said Ocean's 11, that it,
yeah, that's my thought, actually.
Ocean's 11, but wasn't good, because I loved Ocean's 11, period.
Agreed,
yeah,
it had an Ocean's 11.
Do you watch Star Trek for Ocean's 11?
No,
I mean, DS9 had its moment. No, I mean, DS9 had Ferengi episodes that were heists that worked really well. If you look at like the Magnificent Ferengi and stuff, if you do it right and you aim to do comedy instead of unintentionally, then I think it could potentially have worked, But
a comedy section 31 movie that would have been better. I can't even deny it.
At least it would have been trying to be comical, like I said, instead of unintentionally. Right. Because the things I'm laughing at are things that they don't want you to, But again, I'll get into that once I finish this part, because I do have to give a little behind the scenes that I normally start with. Then we'll jump back into the other sections. So apologies if this is a bit dry. I just want to get over the specifics and the actual facts of the matter. So I'll start by saying that Star Trek Section 31 is a 2025 American sci-fi television film produced for Paramount Plus, the streaming service. As we said, it's the first television film and the 14th film overall in the Star Trek franchise. It's a spin-off from the series Star Trek Discovery, but don't hold that against Discovery if you're thinking of watching it. The film is set in the franchise's lost era between the original series films and the Next Generation, roughly in the year 2324. It follows the Mirror Universe's former Emperor Philippa Georgiou as she works with Section 31, a supposedly secret division of Starfleet, tasked with protecting the United Federation of Planets, and it sees Georgiou face the sins of her past. Michelle Yeoh stars as Georgiou, reprising her role from Discovery. Development on a spin-off series with Yeoh was confirmed in January 2019, but production was delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic. A different Discovery spin-off series, Strange New Worlds, was prioritized. Section 31 was redeveloped into a film, which was announced in April 2023. It was released on Paramount Plus on January 24th, 2025. The film was panned by critics, who gave it mostly negative reviews, and some suggested it was the worst entry in the Star Trek franchise. Just to give a few more facts and figures here for you. Casey Rohl becomes the second actress to portray the role of Rachel Garrett. Trisha O'Neill had originated the role in the Next Generation episode Yesterday's Enterprise. This is the first movie to be primarily set in the 24th century since Star Trek Nemesis, and the first to have any scenes set in it since Star Trek 2009, which visits it via Spock Prime's mind meld with alternate reality Kirk. Try keeping that straight in your head. The main story, as I said, takes place on Stardate 1292.4 in the early 24th century. So following the Stardate format used in Next Gen, that places it in 2324. Fair enough. Georgiou previously referred to killing her mother in the Discovery episode The Sanctuary. San's death was previously hinted at via flashback during Georgiou's time sickness, starting in the Discovery episode Scavengers. No explanation is given for how San traversed the apparent six decades between the flashback taking his death in the Mirror Universe and his 24th century Prime Universe return, nor his seeming lack of aging across that time, because that would be logic, and who needs it?
I'm sorry. I was saving that, you know.
Never question it, but okay, whatever. A comic tie-in to this film, Section 31, Emperor Born, was released on 12th of February, 2025, if you really want to just throw money down the drain. And this is the only Star Trek film not to feature any Federation Starfleets or Starfleet uniforms, which might explain a fair percentage of why I absolutely effing hate it. So there we go. So yeah, anything stand out from the behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I get the whole Starfleet uniforms not being a part of it because they're Section 31 and they're like, you know, covert, right?
Yeah, but you could at least still show a starship or two.
Exactly, something.
I mean, the ships they show are ugly.
Spy missions always start from a CD bar. Come on.
I'm fine with the CD bar space station thing, whatever. But, you know, it's in an area of space where you'd think you'd bump into one or two Federation Starship. Just write it into the script just to please nerds like me. Oh, with Federation Starship coming in, we better, you know, pretend we're just a simple garbage scow or something. But, yeah, that's fair enough. So, I mean, like I said, they weren't interested in doing that. It was supposed to be, as you said, Star Trek Ocean's 11, Suicide Squad, something, whatever. And they didn't actually put the Star Trek name up on screen. I did notice when they announced the title. It was just Section 31, which might be for the best.
So, yep.
Yeah. I have a few things that I wanted to mention in terms of writing. But before I do that, is there anything you guys wanted to reference from the behind the scenes other than my kind of very sarcastic reference to Sans apparent immortality?
I think you better finish, because where do we start?
Oh yeah.
Well, first of all, I've kind of said a lot of the things that I wanted to say, but first of all, I will say that one of the things that bugged me in terms of the characters is that I thought the most intriguing kind of new character was the one that was immediately killed off, and that was Mel, the Delton, because it's a species we haven't seen since the motion picture, and there's such a rich kind of thing you can do there with the idea of it's a honey trap. But, you know, you don't have the kind of, I've took an oath of celibacy, you now have the potential to use it for immoral reasons or completely unregulated in some way. And I think you could have done something interesting there. You also have the fact that, you know, it doesn't work on camaloids or cyborgs or whatever. So it doesn't become this all-consuming thing that you can just use whenever on anyone. So,
I loved her character. When she died, I was like, wait, what?
And I actually came from nowhere.
That was clear to me. She was gone the minute they introduced her.
She didn't just die. I had to look at it again. I liked her. I liked her character. I thought they were going to go somewhere with this, but they didn't really.
I mean, I'd have took literally any of the other characters dying first over her, and it was just. I get it's the kind of movie where you need cannon fodder, but like. It was a bad choice to be the first victim for me. So, yeah. Maybe that's just me. I don't know if I was biased by the fact that, you know, the actress is pretty gorgeous as well, but maybe it's just me.
No, I agree with you. I liked her character. I didn't think it was fair that she had to go first. Or honestly, I felt like, really, they're killing all these actors off. I was very, I didn't like that part, that they killed so many of them.
I get it. Like I said, it's that kind of thing, isn't it? So when you're doing this kind of movie, you have to,
you know, watching it, you're sitting there, you're going, I like this character. And I immediately went, oh, so that means she's dead in the next 10 minutes. Of course,
exactly.
You know, like, and it shouldn't be that predictable, but you know, a lot of times.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, but you know, I was clearly blindsided. But so what about you, Mary? Did you have a favorite character out of the new kind of characters that are introduced? We'll deal with Rachel Garrett separately, but did you have one that appealed to you more?
To be honest, I actually really liked, and again, I had said this earlier, I really forgot like the names of the characters.
I can give you them if you want. I've written them down.
I thought that I wouldn't like him when I first saw his introduction. I was like, no. But the mech guy, what's his name again?
Zeph.
Zeph.
I think it's Zeph, that guy. Yeah.
I liked Zeph. I thought Zeph was he was annoying in his introduction, but then I was like, you know what? He was the right tool to bring in the levity. that what, you know, that they were trying to bring into the movie. Because, like, obviously, like, we all know that Star Trek is good at having, like, a serious movie and then introducing levity in there. They're great at that. This was not that time. Yeah. I'll just say that. Yeah. But his levity, like, his, like, little jokes and things like that, for the most part, were interesting to me. And I wanted to know more about him. I wanted to know why he was, like, all, you know, like, because he was very upset when Giorgio, like, said something about, you know, like, his mech parts and stuff. Well, and yeah. I wanted to know more. I wanted, how did he get there? How did he get to be how he is? And I wanted to know more about him. And, you know, that wasn't something that we were given.
I mean, he was easily
taken over.
It was just an excuse for a bad joke, because they did say he had that kind of, and I forget what they called it, but basically this kind of dysmorphia where he doesn't see the technology as being separate from him. And it's just kind of, it's so bad. It's just kind of, I mean, I'm not, you know, attacking you for liking this character. That's fair enough. But
I didn't
warm to him at all. That's fair enough.
Like, I mean,
you're not gonna
feel bad about it.
This is not a hill you're willing to die on, obviously, no. One way or the other. But no, I just felt he was an excuse. I didn't think the actor was good. I thought the jokes that they tried to give him were ridiculous, whether it was the bickering or the kind of like, oh, don't insult the mech. If you insult the mech, it's also insulting me. And it's just kind of, oh, shut up. You're just annoying me. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't the worst,
like,
character.
He was just the most intriguing character for me. And I did like Mel as well. Like, I wanted to, like, again, explore the Delton side, you know, like, actually being a fully fleshed out character as opposed to just, you know, a honeypot and, you know, just something, you know, if we could see her being her full Delton self. And we never really got that beyond a hazy pink gaze.
Yeah, exactly. And even then it was used on one of her own team,
right.
Which is so stupid. It's like, at least give her the chance to, you know. And then when she gets killed, it's like, don't you have the ability to, like, hypnotize everyone in love with you? Why are you letting this dude just shoot you? You know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
Anyway. Just to briefly address it, I didn't mind Rachel Garrett being there, and I liked that she stayed moral when I was worried they were going to ruin the character when she was announced. But even still, I mean, it just left me feeling, man, I would really give anything instead of this movie to have a movie about her path to the captain of the Enterprise C and, you know, her Starfleet career instead of whatever the heck this is that we're dealing with here. So yeah, and again, it just felt like you do this a lot. It's kind of, we'll throw in a Trek Legacy reference to kind of appeal to the fans, and it's so surface level. Like I said, this could be set at any time except that you've included Rachel Garrett just to have her there. And it does it a lot. It does it with, like, the assistant Virgil to Giorgio, who is I think it's Shalonian, the species from Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, despite the fact that that species was supposed to be extinct, but never mind. At least we get to point and go, ooh, I remember that episode of the original series. You know, it's just kind of, there for no other reason. And even when they run through the kind of, they're doing their fight and they run through and it's like, oh, look, an Andorian sleeping with an Antedian. I know those species.
Yeah, right. And also the, you know, like the Member little berries. Flash of non- nudity. That was wild. That was crazy. I did not know what to think about that, except I thought Ken doll, and I was like, I feel weird about this.
I don't even know what you're referring to. That I must have missed that.
Yes, agreed with you.
It's really quick.
Okay.
When they burst into the room and they're doing their thing, the Andorian and whatever, you get a full frontal flash of the Andorian, who is ostensibly male, and his front area looks like a Ken doll.
A Ken doll, yes it does.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly, wow. I did not notice this.
I stopped. When I saw it, I needed to go back and I paused it to look at it. Guys, I watched this movie 3 times. I at least need to have this, okay?
To speak about the atrocious elephant in the room, I think everybody's least favorite character, Fuzz. The Nanakin in the Velkin, just remote control. I can barely speak with the contempt I have for this actor and character, because every last thing about it was a misstep. whatever that accent was, first of all, was
the weirdly
horrendous.
Racist accent. Is that what you're talking about?
And like why?
It's
why
is so it racist?
Why is it a thing that Nannikins have to have really broad accents? Because even they introduce his wife at the end, and it's like, oh, she sounds like an old Southern prospector.
Like, yes, agreed. Yeah, that wasn't even good either. I lived in the South, and I know people don't sound like that. Like, that's embarrassing.
Mary, I have family from that. Ireland. I was so offended throughout the entirety of that.
It was like the worst accent. It really was. He didn't do any of them right. But I'm wondering, was that intentional, or is it just that the actor didn't have a thing for accents?
See, I spent a bit of time thinking about that, and I came to the conclusion it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter. It was a
like his Vulcan suit, for crying out loud. How do we not know about these? That's some pretty crazy tech that probably should have showed up a lot, you know?
Oh, don't get me started on that. I mean, the idea that they do this a lot again with the kind of prequelization of Trek, in that they introduce like god tech that would have been so useful. So, like, as much as I enjoyed the actual physical fight with the phasing device thing, like, that shouldn't exist, surely. And if it does, how handy would that have been to get into a million places that you needed to in like previous missions that we'd seen in different Trek series, you know? Well,
Even though it doesn't exist, it's just way too early for it. Like, that's what happened in the episode with Ro and Guinan.
That was an accident. It wasn't like we can do it at will to kind of. But like, even by the 32nd century of Discovery, we're not. Like, I'd say even in the 32nd century of Discovery, we're not like, well, it doesn't matter. Nothing can hold us or keep us away from shielded areas because we've got this phase thing that can just get us anywhere. It's stupid, and it's like you invent it for one kind of. You invent it for one good sequence, and then don't realize that you've broken the world.
It's actually one of the most galling things to me, because they had this opportunity to make a direct-to-streaming movie that could have serviced fans and been what, you know, like, and they gave us this committee-made garbage. Like,
opportunity missed.
The arrogance that they think they know how to drive things like this is just unbelievable.
Oh, I believe it is arrogance. That's been one of my largest things. Go ahead, I'll finish up.
So you have this huge fan base, and I'll get into what you were talking about. Oh, we put out a bunch of crap for them to buy. Mm-hmm. And their literal thought is they'll buy anything because they're fans.
Period.
You know? and we don't have to think about this. What's most profitable?
Period.
It's art, for crying out loud. And you know, if you take the agency from the writers like they do, and if you make things like this, which are clearly meant to appeal to a very wide audience, they appeal to freaking nobody. You know, so like, what a wasted opportunity, what wasted money, what a wasted talent in Michelle Yeoh. You have this Oscar-winning actress who is now coming back because she likes Star Trek and she wants to help further it, and you put her in this. It's surprising she even did it. Like,
can I just jump in and add to that as well, that I would have been so thrilled if you told me a few years ago that Jamie Lee Curtis was going to be in Star Trek, and they gave her this,
right?
And I'm like, oh my god,
agreed.
I actually had that part out of my mind because it hurt.
Yeah,
it was painful.
It was so painful.
She's one of my favorite actresses, and they gave her nothing. It's a nothing part to start with, and then the character makes no sense. Why the heck Section 31 have a control after Discovery Season 2 is baffling in the first place. Mm-hmm. And just why be a cyborg, except again, it's just, oh, it looks cool. You know, it's so stupid. It's so dumb, honestly. It's the ultimate style over substance of like, people will like it, it looks cool. It looks flashy, that's what we'll do. And it's like, oh, shut up. we have some kind of, you know, some awareness.
If they spent less money on these big actors, not of course Michelle Yeoh, because I think she was essential, and put more effort in writing something that made more sense, I think that would have been better. Like, there was no point to Jamie Lee Curtis's character at all, and I love her. You know, she's the all-time queen of horror.
It might have been a nice cameo if it was a good movie. It would have been a cool moment. Or like I said, if it turned out that she was their commander and she's just, I don't know, a human or an alien commander. But then, like I said, even then when you get the shot of it and it's like, oh, and of course she's a cyborg. Just for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Yeah, like all the special special effects and the you know, and the costuming, which was incredible. Like the costuming and the makeup, top notch. I thought it like the movie visually, this is the one good thing that I'll say about it. It looked really nice. It played like garbage, but there were definitely pretty things about it.
I get that it looks flashy, but to me, it could have been any generic sci-fi set at any time. Correct. Anyway. There was nothing Star Trek about it. Really.
No, and that is my beef with it as well. You could, I made a video like halfway through the movie, and then at the end of the movie, and I think the second video that I made at the end after I finished it, I said, "There's no reason for a Star Trek label on this." I think I would have liked it better had they taken off the Star Trek label.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, there's the few things that they try, which they always do, which I think, Justin, you said they were member berries more than anything, which is like, oh, look, a Chelonian, an Andorian. Oh, look, it's Rachel Garrett. You know, she's going to be the captain of the Enterprise. So, of course, she gets a line where she talks about, oh, I intend to live a long time and eventually see the captain's chair. Yeah, we get it. We know what you're doing. You know, it's just kind of.
I'm going to say what I've been thinking since the first time I saw this movie. This felt like one of those B-rated bad sci-fi movies that you watch just because there's nothing else to watch and you're like, oh, this is stupid. Let's watch a stupid sci-fi. I felt like I was watching something so underproduced. And so from the budget, it was horrible. And I think the actors did the best they could with what they got. And I don't fault them at all. It's the writing. It is what it is.
No disrespect.
Even if they were going for that, like, the best B movies are the terrible ones on purpose.
Yeah.
That would have been better. Like, just acknowledge it, nod to the camera, wink. At least all of us would then be going, okay. Sure, you made garbage and you're trying to be funny with it.
Right. Exactly. I would love to see this as a Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Somebody's going to do it at some point, I'm sure.
I hope so. I want to be in that.
I would, but I would just spend the entire time just throwing things at Sven Rugi Rock whenever he's on screen. That guy's a terrible actor. I hate saying this about anybody. I'm not a nasty person, and I give everyone the benefit of the doubt. That guy cannot act. I'm sorry, just don't cast him because he's terrible. How you could ruin something that's already crap is just beyond me, but somehow he managed. I'll take this turd and I'll shit on it. Now it's twice as bad.
Oh, God.
Anyway, but yeah.
This is cathartic.
It is.
Oh, well, after being forced to watch this a third time to come here today, which I planned on doing eventually, but I wanted a much longer time window between the initial,
I have so many questions I was going to ask, and I haven't got to any of them because I've just been too busy bitching about various things. Anyway, so I'll come up and ask one of them now. So what did you guys think? Like I said, one of the stronger points for me is the through line of Giorgio's story and kind of her connection with San that's been hinted at in the past in Discovery and in novels and things. So I didn't mind that. I thought it worked. But again, I don't see the point of... Well, it's not that I don't see the point. I hate that they did the whole MacGuffin thing with the Godsend, which is... It's current Trek's absolute kind of go-to. Like, look at any of the Abrams movies and they're all exactly the same. Like, the Arbranath in Star Trek Beyond is the worst part of that movie because it's just like, we have to have a universe-ending MacGuffin to be fighting over. Otherwise... What's it about?
Happens every week.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the mirror universe that you couldn't get to apparently just has revolving doors that people can go in and out now. You know, like San traversed 60 years in a universe. Dada No flew over from the mirror universe 2 hours. You know, they're all just, yeah, sure. It's just like nipping down to the shops these days, apparently, but whatever.
It's the open secret that nobody knows about. Yeah.
Even then, though, I mean, even within that plot, I think they completely missed the trick because it's quite obvious from this that we're never going to see these characters again. And like I said, I kind of love that we were following something of a redemption story as much as it's possible for Michelle Yeoh, but they kind of, even then, they make her deliberately so unlikable and irredeemable. Like, why show her murdering her parents and doing all these horrible things? Because it just kind of reinforces, like, you can't redeem this person.
Nope.
But if you were going to come close to it, they had an absolute possible way to do it, which is that just let her die with the explosive device that shuts off the entry to the mirror universe so that she saves literally the entire quadrant. And, you know, you've killed millions and billions of people, but you've also saved that amount and you've died a hero. And we're never going to see you again anyway, so that way we give you some closure. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah. That was probably the right way to go. That was,
yeah.
Probably was.
You know, and since it wasn't going to be a TV show anyway, absolutely. Like, yeah. What a waste. Oh, man, I just can't even. There's so much in this movie that is exactly like that. You know, you mentioned San there. Like, there are ways they could have explored that and made it interesting, and they just went, nah, here it is, accept it.
Yeah, you know. I think that needed more time, to be honest, because that's an interesting plot that I think could have played out a bit more with a bit more time and effort, as opposed to just, you know, we see him kill himself in the mirror universe and then the supposed shock big reveal of, oh, it was me the whole time, I'm alive. And I'm like, well, of course it is. We wouldn't have seen the flashbacks otherwise, would we? I know how media works. You know?
Yes. But, and somehow you've discovered how not to age. That's most impressive.
Yeah.
I actually really did like the first 10 minutes. I thought Georgia's background and how she became the emperor, I liked that story, and I would have signed on for a whole movie about that. Being basically the end, you know, like that being the end of the movie, because I would have liked to explore how she and San, you know, like developed that relationship together, you know, their bond, their alliance, apparently. Was she fully invested in it? Because I was never sure. Because, you know, she could do what she did to be the emperor to him and treat him the way apparently that she did, from the time that we see that, for, you know, her putting the hot sword on his face to him introducing the godsend to her. And then at the end, you know, when he's dying, then she's like all like boo-hooing about it. And I'm like, no, wait a second. You said in here, like, you didn't want him to die, but then he is dead and then he's not dead. And then you're fighting him and then you're sad again. I'm really confused. I don't believe you. I don't believe any of her feelings.
I see. Yeah.
So that was my thing. So I would have really actually liked a different movie.
I see what you're saying. I think if they'd made a movie where that was the ending, though, it would have just been a Hunger Games movie. Because that's basically what you were describing.
But I would have been for it because I like the mirror universe, and I think that Star Trek could work with that. You know,
see, I never like it when they, again, I think this is perhaps me being nerdy, but I think they misunderstand the mirror universe in that Terrans are not inherently evil. By the time of DS9, the Terrans have been overthrown and they're the good guys again and stuff, and it's kind of. The very universe for me is more of a parable of, like, be careful how you go about things, because even a good person could end up on the wrong path and end up, you know, following a horrible fascist regime or whatever. Not just like, ooh, everybody here is such a sinister, evil person genetically, and we all go around doing bad things. It's like, that's not as interesting to me. But anyway. The next question that I had was about another character that I quite enjoyed his backstory. And again, it kind of, I think this would have worked had this gone to a series, and I'm now kind of gutted that we won't see more of it. I thought it was really intriguing, the idea that Alok Sahar was an augment from Earth, possibly even one of Khan's men or something similar, who'd been frozen since like the 20th century and had that genetic engineering thing going on. But as it is, it's kind of irrelevant to this movie. So you just get it dropped into dialogue that, you know, he's got that connection to Georgiou, that they both were tyrants working for evil people or whatever.
Yeah.
And I really want to see that kind of character explored more, because again, it's a part of the Trek universe that's huge. It's meant to have been like a global or near global war about people being enhanced and what it can do. So,
and what did we see with him about being an augment? Like,
yeah, nothing.
Where was his augment powers? You know, like, for lack of a better term, where were they? Because like when he was fighting with Fuzz, like, he was losing.
It was so well shown that I watched it three times and completely missed that. That's insane.
Yeah. Oh. I think that would be an interesting, that's probably the only character that I would be like, I'd read a novel about his backstory of like, he was in the 20th century. He fought against this tyrant. She basically took him and made him what he hated into an augment. Then he was frozen. Now he wakes up in this century and there's no place for him. So he gets a black ops type sort of gig. It's like, that's really interesting, but you did nothing with it.
Very true.
I don't know. How did I miss that? Oh, God.
I get a whole feeling thing about, that he might actually, you might actually go back and watch to see if you catch it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Do I hate myself or not? I don't know.
It's one of the better moments, actually, because I was saying, like, they should have had Giorgio die redeeming herself. And she does say that because she says to Sahar, if, you know, your tormentor, the woman that you hated, that made you what you are, if she was in front of you now, would you kill her? And he says, yes, absolutely. And so Giorgio's response is like, well, then I'm glad I know you. Absolutely. Fantastic. Yeah, whatever. So it's like, all right.
I just thought that they had written him as a generic. I also lived in a horrible empire, and that was it. I did not put any of that together. Oh, that's
horrible empire was 1990s Earth, apparently.
Yeah.
But anyway, so... yeah. What did you guys think about this whole mole double agent idea? It's kind of a cliche in this kind of movie, but I thought there were some clever moments. I did like that, you know, that it kind of gives you the bluff, double bluff, mislead. Was it Zeph? No, it wasn't. It was the Nanakin controlling him. And, you know, he tried to plant the evidence on Garrett. So I was like, that section of the movie has me slightly intrigued, at least to see kind of what's going on. And, you know, I like that you can't immediately decipher what the truth of the matter is. Of course, they then ruin it by having the film become Weekend at Zeph's when What's-His-Face starts controlling his dead body.
Yeah, that was so Weekend at Bernie's. Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm still
that
tapped into his corpse.
Horrible.
Oh, no.
I was like, are we really doing this? I was perplexed by that moment.
It was a throwback to the Ferengi heist, you know?
Yes,
the one with Iggy Pop. Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys have any thoughts on the kind of spy mole double agent type plots that you wanted to bring up?
I have thoughts on the Nanakins, but not that specific part.
Yeah, fair enough.
I also felt like it was lacking the whole spy thing. I felt like they didn't really do the spy thing very well.
Yeah.
In a spy
thing? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, how do you miss that in a spy movie?
I think that's now that I'm thinking about it, actually, Justin, I think you might be right that might be why they kind of bothered with the Nanakins, as they needed somebody who could, unseen, kind of get in these things and hack technology and stuff. But I still don't think you needed to have made that character as bad as they wrote it. Just as hacky, terrible, and ugh.
You were talking about God Tech earlier, and you want to talk about an enemy you can't defeat. Like
a microbe. No.
we have a treaty between give me a break. No, they win. Sorry, it's over. Bacteria does not care.
Again, it's just to kind of have them say, well, even though his ship blew up, he could have survived because he's tiny. But even then, like you said, when they're playing for the really not funny joke of like, oh, I've got hundreds of offspring just waiting to be born, and it's like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's not funny. Yeah.
they had the opportunity to be an absolutely terrifying villain, right? If they had actually embraced that and gone down that angle, that would have been that's like Borg level evil.
Borg or changeling. You don't know who.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know who. Who it? How, if we have this technology where they've got these, androids that can be controlled by these guys, who is real and who is
not?
And you can never pin them down because they're literally microscopic.
Impervious to explosions of all kinds. So
if only there was some kind of small enemy that was kind of bug-like that had invaded the Federation in a previous series that we did nothing with. That we could have used here.
Exactly. Hello.
So weird.
If only they would have watched a little Star Trek, they might have known.
You know, it's weird that they've never explored these themes at all in the series. Oh, man.
So the last question I had with regards to kind of the writing and the general stuff we've been talking about is there any part of this that you really liked or that felt Star Trek-y to you? And again, I'll come to you first, actually, Justin. Trek. We'll go reverse. Justin, I'll ask you first.
I liked the ideas. I liked the themes. There was room for a really good story. And whether that was crushed for whatever reason, I don't know. But they had an opportunity, and they squandered it. But there are good overall tones to some of the things there that are totally Star Trek. They just flubbed them all.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, what about you, Mary? Sorry.
Go ahead. No, it's cool.
Sorry, Mary, what about you? Did you think anything sort of appealed or seemed Trek-esque to you?
No.
Short but sweet. Fairly to the point.
I don't have much more to say on that. Like I said earlier, you know, I liked the mirror universe, like seeing that part. So, I mean, I guess since it was in the mirror universe, that was interesting to me. But as far as like what really feels like Star Trek, nothing in the movie felt like Star Trek to me.
That's fair enough.
And that made me sad.
I want to be clear. Neither did it feel like that to me. I could see the potential.
Yeah. I wanted more from Rachel Garrett. When I heard that Rachel Garrett was going to be in the movie, I did get a little bit excited and then was disappointed. So, I mean, I guess her being in it, just existing, was the highlight.
There's your member, Barry.
Maybe I'm low bar, but I was just like, well, they didn't ruin her and make her terribly immoral.
No,
so,
no, they did not.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. And I get that, you know, it's nice that she gets to be the kind of moral compass in a couple of occasions, and, you know, even gets the whole, like, you're not going to do what you want, you won't turn me into a murderer. I'm like, yay, somebody who's decent for a second. But, what about you, Nita, anyway?
You know, I'm sort of in between Justin and Mary. Yes, there was nothing Star Trek about this, but I think there was potential for Star Trek to be in this. They just lost those opportunities in writing it the way they did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a standalone movie, even calling it Section 31 and removing Star Trek's name from it, you know, the word Star Trek, it doesn't remove it from Star Trek, because that's Section 31 is a Star Trek concept. So it still gives that implication whether the words are there or not. And there was nothing Star Trek about it. There was nothing Section 31-ish about it. It really just felt like a poorly made sci-fi and with fantastic actors that did the best they could. And I felt really, really bad for them to have to be associated with that.
Let's be clear. Some good actors, not all. Mm-hmm. Again, Sven Rugirok, if you're ever in the area, I will fight you. I will knock you out for what you did to start.
I've never thrown a punch in my life, but yeah.
You insulted both Star Trek and my Irish heritage. You are going down. So.
That was bad. I'm not going to lie. I will give you that. Like, I'm not one who's for violence or anything like that, but if I were Irish, I would also be really
pissed. Yeah, so. That was pretty horrible.
I was offended personally for the Irish, all of them, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, secondhand embarrassment, if nothing else. What was I saying? I forgot now. Yeah, oh, that's the last question I have about the writing. And I think this kind of sums up the movie in terms of they'll do things just for the heck of it. Why on earth is a kid's doll programmed to say, hee-hee, we're all going to die? Where's the logic there?
Correct. What the heck?
Clearly it's an intelligent doll and sentient.
Does it have an AI clearly. Or what?
Just baffling. Goodness. That happens and it's supposed to be a great like laugh moment, and I'm just left going, what?
Right.
Kids toy.
Normally that's the kind of thing I'd love to pick apart.
Just weird.
Yeah. But in this case, it's such a small piece in a huge pile of trash, as it was. Like, oh, I didn't even think to pick that apart, but absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys are just giving me more and more reasons to dislike this movie. This is actually painful.
Is that even possible?
Yeah. Yes, apparently.
I didn't know that we could dislike this movie more than we did.
Oh, we can.
By listening to each other's thoughts on it. And we actually have reached that level of dislike. That's sad. 100%.
So I'm going to move us quickly to the acting because I've kind of said most of what I want to about the, you know, Sven, I'm looking at you. Some of the bad and some of the good. I'll get into some of my kind of people I didn't mind later on, but I want to throw it up to you guys and see, is there anything you wanted to briefly mention about the acting in the movie that we haven't said?
I think we've said it all.
Yeah, we've said quite a bit.
That's fair enough. I mean,
kudos to the actors for trying their best with the giant pile of crap.
Right.
I was actually quite surprised at how personally tied the plot is to Giorgio, and I kind of like the parts that deal with her backstory and growth and the unpredictability. Yeah. I think they're the strongest elements of it, and they feel like a natural continuation from where we left her in Discovery, which I appreciated. But I do think the opening act, like I'd already kind of hinted at, it really overplays the cheese factor, and you're just left groaning when it's like, ooh, look, she's eating an eyeball. Ooh, what a bad bitch. You know? Yeah. It's pantomime camp. It's, you know, oh, everybody boo the evil queen kind of thing, really. As I said, I like Casey Rohl. I think she clearly did study Trisha O'Neill's portrayal, and I liked her acting. I liked that the writing allowed Garrett to remain the legendary figure she should be. And, you know, I don't see any reason why she can't be the captain of an Enterprise someday. What else? I think Omari Hardwick, as I said, who played Sahar, and Sam Richardson, who played Quasi, I think really do give good performances, and they're both really good actors. Just sometimes they get given dialogue, particularly squabbling and bickering dialogue, that's just like, they're doing the best they can, and I feel bad for them because you can't elevate just pure crap. And they are trying, bless them. I mean, they're making the most of the material they're given. And as I said, I hated Sven Regrok, and Robert Kaczynski, for me, didn't do it either. Would have liked to see more of Humbly Gonzalez as Mel. And I thought James Hiroyuki Liao, who plays San, fine, you know, as a generic villain of the week. Mm-hmm. Nothing huge, nothing bad, just kind of there, you know. And my last note on the acting is that, my word, the actress that played the young Giorgio, I don't know why she chose to do this, but her weird croaky voice acting was so annoying. I don't know if it was just to try and match Michelle's accent or something, but I found it so off-putting.
I just went through the Hunger Games, and this is how affected by it I am.
Have a drink of water, love, you know?
Yeah,
grab a drink.
I had, when I watched it with that, you know, I was one of the people who kind of signed on with this this criticism of Discovery, where everybody seemed to whisper talk. And when she started doing it, I was like, please stop.
It wasn't just whisper. It was like whisper sore throat talk. It was like, San couldn't do what he had to do, but I can. I've just messed the last day. It's like, shut up. More clearly.
It's like, are they trying to be ominous? Because it's not coming through as ominous.
I really do think it's just because the actress probably couldn't match Michelle Yeoh's accent. And they were like, maybe if you whisper and go a bit quieter, we'll be able to disguise the fact that you don't sound anything like you should.
They get a vocal coach to teach you.
Yeah.
Because that's what actors are, you know, that's what they do. They get vocal coaches.
Just throw in a line.
Accents correctly.
Yeah. Well, throw in a line where you're just like, Emperor, I see you've been living in China for the last 30 years ever since we saw you as a child. Yes, that is why my accent is now completely different.
Yeah.
I didn't even concentrate on this. I was just sitting there trying to figure out the political system of the Mirror Universe thing. The Emperor is chosen by the Hunger Games. And it's the murder planet. We live murder here. We're really murdery. That's literally what I was sitting there thinking.
In future to the directing, I've kind of already given my criticism, which, like I said, is just like, it's all the worst cliches. And it's a director I really enjoyed in a lot of his other Star Trek work. So did you guys have anything you wanted to bring? Oh, before I do that, sorry, quickly. Hate the awful new camaloid effect. Don't think you need it. We've seen camaloids in, like, the aforementioned Star Trek VI. That was what Iman's character was, with the yellow eyes and the shape-shifting. And she just shapeshifted it. There wasn't any need for this weird, flashy, spiky mess of thing that they need to do in order to change into something. I hear
like a venom type thing, because that's what I thought.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Probably a financial constraint. You know, recreating effects from that time period are probably really hard, right?
They just didn't do anything, though. I mean, the other one, it was just like, oh well, she's there 1 minute, and then the next she's become someone else. It's just, you know. Even the changeling effects from DS9 looked better than whatever the heck that was. You know?
Yeah.
anyway. So yeah, any thoughts on the direction before I move us along from here?
Oh, I'm sorry that they had to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
I'm not qualified to answer this question. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I feel like I'm actually a really terrible critic when it comes to that. So
that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I can feel us flagging, and I think we've said as much as we are basically willing to while venting our feelings and having a bit of a therapy session. So I'm going to throw it open to you guys out there if you're listening in the audience. Oh, boy. I did put out the usual social media prompt asking if you'd seen Section 31 and what your thoughts are. And be prepared, guests here today, because this is going to be very interesting. I got a lot of feedback for this one, possibly more than for anything we've done in a while. And it was mostly not great, but you'd be surprised at a couple of them.
Incoming transmission.
So I'm just going to dive straight in as quick as I can and tell you that from Facebook, the Star Trek VIP Nerd Lounge, Kale Clayton says, I really wanted to like this, but found it very disappointing. Stephen Roy Summers says, me too. The post asked for a detailed breakdown of everything you thought of it, but I just want to say it's bad from beginning to end. He then said, it looked like it was written by someone who'd never seen Star Trek, much less the episodes where Section 31 is featured.
Okay. I'm with him.
Mm-hmm. From Star Trek fans UK and Ireland, Dave Bennett just says, it's garbage, with 3 exclamation marks.
Straight to the point.
From Star Trek VIP Nerd Lounge, Doug Jenkins says, it was immature, like it was written by 13-year-olds. Bit of an insult to young kids there. Over on Blue Sky, Chaos Jones says, here's the thing. The entire movie felt like it was a fever dream that Giorgio probably had the very first night she stepped into the Guardian of Forever. She probably woke up that next morning, shook her head and said, wow, that was weird. I'd be for that ending if somebody wants to film it. But
you got to start anyway. The next movie.
Give it the new
heart
ending.
Yeah, exactly.
Big I'm sorry to the fans.
Yeah, we're back to Star Trek fans UK and Ireland here. Lee Johnson says, big miss. Scott Grayson says, I enjoyed it, but it could have been better. I give it 3 out of 5. Probably the best we've had so far. Darren McLean says, well, this will just be a blatant attack on it. The movie was good, sorry. Those calling it a miss must not be fans.
Rude.
I'm not going to touch that one. That got a little bit heated in the old
words.
Yeah. Malcolm Wood says, my prediction, you will be 90 minutes older and gain nothing from it. I don't hate it. I just felt nothing watching it. It was like Star Trek produced by AI.
Ouch. Oh my god!
I had heard that's AI actually as well.
ChatGPT wrote it. That makes sense.
That explains so much.
But be prepared because Hallie Brewer says, "I loved it, not as much as Discovery bits with Michelle Yeoh and a bit of a Star Wars vibe, but fun and worth it. I think all the haters are garbage people and do not deserve any science fiction. It is fun, sometimes deep, sometimes silly, and sometimes a bit stupid, but always worth a look. I liked it." Okay, that was certainly
I disagree, but I'm glad she liked it. But I was never mad at anybody who liked it, because I was like, good. Somebody's got to like it.
Exactly, somebody does, agreed.
I don't like it when people poop on stuff I like.
Try to see the other side. Oh, wait, I can't.
I don't understand why they like it, but I respect that they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm with Mary. Somebody has to like it at some point.
Absolutely.
Somebody was the audience for this. It hit with somebody.
It was definitely aimed at somebody, that's for sure.
Really? Because I don't think it was. I think that's the problem.
Think it did a terrible job of whatever. I think that whoever it was intended for, they didn't do a good job with. But it did
trying
with somebody.
To be... everything for everyone. It's fantastic.
Exactly, yeah. And it ends up being nothing for anyone. So, yeah, moving on. Don Godsman says, has someone been caught in a temporal anomaly? This show is a couple of months old and we've all moved on already. It was poop emoji. Okay. from my personal Facebook, Andrew Haunt says, I was really disappointed. It didn't feel like Trek or Section 31 at all. It felt like a supermarket DVD knockoff of Guardians of the Galaxy. I wanted espionage and intrigue, not this mess. It looked extremely pretty, but was a letdown. Did you write this, Mary?
no, but It sounds like something that I did write, because it I know does, I commented on it too. So.
Oh, you did, but I haven't got that included because, you know, you're here. So.
Right, right. No, I think I feel like I did write something sort of like that, but hey, whoever that person is, I fully agree with you. We're one mind.
Well done, Andrew Haunt. You've leveled yourself with Mary's gig, I think. Yeah. My friend Faith Johnson says it's generic made for TV crud. Nothing at all to do with Section 31 or Star Trek. No memorable characters or scenes. Some cool special effects, but that's about it. From the group that's simply called Starfleet, Jason Rangan says, I'm sorry to say this is the worst thing to ever air that had the word Star Trek in it. I enjoy Discovery and I love Michelle Yeoh. So, yeah. Michelle Matthias Joseph says, I love me Star Trek any day, but this was total nonsense. This seemed to be filler for a series. It was horrible. From the Red Shirts and Runabouts group, this is my absolute favorite description, by the way. Jerry McMullen says, to be honest, I watched 20 minutes and gave up. It was not Star Trek for me. It felt like Paramount had ordered a Star Trek movie from Timu or Wish.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I was like, yes, nail on the head. That is my favorite description of what
this is. That's perfect. That really is perfect.
I have so many more of these, by the way. We're back to Star Trek fans, UK and Ireland. Graham Montgomery says, very disappointing. Felt like a knockoff of Suicide Squad with poorly executed gimmicks and the most in-your-face characters with no stealth. Section 31 on DS9 was really interesting when Star Trek, for me, was at its best. I wish the writers had started by watching that. Yes. Gareth J. Ballinger says, score 1 out of 5. It's good to see Sean Slater get some work, though. It was more like Guardians of the Galaxy Part 6 slapstick. Liam Zalaskins pulls no punches and simply says it was a complete shit show.
He sucker punched it real quick.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, this is the Star Trek family group. We have 3 or 4 here. Jen Engel says, I enjoyed it. It was fun and different, like a space-aged A-team. That being said, I may be addicted to all sci-fi. So. Trina Bexfield says, I really wish I would have liked it, but it was really bad. It seems like the changes that happened to Giorgio in Discovery didn't affect her at all. Matt Donahue says, I turned it off after about 30 minutes, not what I was hoping for. Debbie O'Brien says, I rated a 0. Absolutely horrible. The powers that be should be ashamed of this movie. So now we're over to Star Trek fans. Keith Rudner says, it was a miss for me. I wanted to love it. I just couldn't. The only Trek ever I can say that about. 2 out of 5. Bobby Lynn says, I didn't love it, but I'm pleased they took a big swing and tried something new. Every franchise needs to shake things up sometimes to keep it fresh. Okay.
Dave, well, that's Eisenstein. The first fair thing I've heard you say from the other side.
Exactly, yeah. Dave Eisenstein says, it was terrible. It felt like watching a direct-to-video 1980s sci-fi movie with a bigger budget. But now Shatner can say he didn't make the worst Star Trek movie. So made the worst theatrical one. Corey Honey, this is again such a brilliant summation. Corey Honey just says, who are these people?
That's kind of right though, you know?
Yeah.
Just speaking on that one statement right there, okay? So we all, for the most part, I think we all kind of said, oh, you know, Mel's killing off was like the. And they all acted sad for a second. And I was like, how in the hell are we supposed to care about her when we hardly had any time? I do not care. Like, I'm sad that we didn't get to know more about the character and everything like that. But I'm not sad she's dead because she's just dead. It's just that.
Exactly.
There was no, I was not emotionally invested.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. Still in Star Trek fans, then Luke Michaels says, it's just not Star Trek. Shame, really. Where was I? Josh Pritchett Jr. says, I thought the cast was good, but the story was more like Mission Impossible in space. So many things have been compared to here. I was hoping for a story about the ethical issues of an intelligence service and why no one in DS9 had ever heard of them before they tried to recruit Julian. Christopher Dales Redden says, while everyone's going to overflow this with hate, this is one positive comment. It was thrilling, exciting to watch, something new that makes you actually appreciate it despite it being the first non-Trek movie in the franchise. I enjoyed it as it is. 9 out of 10. Mary, I actually have yours here. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, go for it. I feel like I wrote something pretty fair.
Mary Folds says, Miss, if it didn't have the Star Trek label, it would have been an okay but not great Marvel-type movie. It took something that we know about, Section 31, and a character that we know about, Giorgio, both dark and treacherous, and turned it into campy fun. I want Star Trek to take risks and do new things, but this just didn't make sense in the established lore of the greater universe. Fair.
That was a really good. That was a really good comment. Wow.
You were very reserved.
That was surprisingly reserved.
It's very on point.
So some fans, you know, love it anyway.
So I wrote a review after I read that. I didn't post it because it went 18 pages long. And I had one paragraph that was positive. And, you know, like, this is, I can't see the other side on this one. I'm trying. I really am. You know, if you enjoyed it, good for you. I'm happy. I'm not trying to tell you you can't enjoy things, but holy God. What a pile of garbage.
We've had a bit of an exorcism, I think. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the first time I watched it, I thought it wasn't the worst thing I'd ever seen. And I get it if you're just watching some kind of like, oh, fun sci-fi background stuff. Fair enough, you know, trying to play as close to Devil's Advocate as I can. But, yeah. So this is going to be fun because on my episodes, I always like to do a favorite character moment and line. And normally we're spoiled for choice, but frankly, I can't wait to see if anybody comes up with anything this time.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to go around and ask quickly, who was your favorite character in the movie? And if you don't know a reason why, then why? I'll start with you, Nita.
You know, actually, I really like Mel because I thought they were going to explore that alien, which I had not seen since the first Star Trek movie, the motion picture. And I wanted more of that. I wanted to know more about, you know, their abilities, the culture. Like, I thought they were going to give us something more. That was the one character that I felt like, yeah, you know, and she had this little Latina kind of flair to her.
Okay.
Because of who the actress is, which I really liked, and I could understand it culturally. And then, boom, she's dead. And, well, that's that.
Yeah. I feel bad for the actress because all the behind-the-scenes stuff of her, like, shaving her head and everything, she seems so excited and so happy to be part of it. And it's just like, you're in it for, like, 10 minutes, girl. Bless you. Back to you, Mary, and ask, do you have a favorite, dare I ask?
I mean, I'm going to say, I could make the easy grab and say, you know, Giorgio was my favorite. Mm. But I feel like that's the easy way out.
Okay.
Because I, like, she was the best thing in the movie. And I want to give her credit for that. But I felt attached to no characters. I didn't care about what happened to any of them, including Giorgio, because I felt like she was untethered from anything that happened to her in Discovery. Her stuff with the Guardian, like, none of that seemed to make any difference. And so I think you had said also, like, if you were going to ask, like, a favorite quote from the movie, it was the meh. And that's how I felt about the movie. Meh.
Fair enough. We'll go around and ask everyone else that when we finish this bit. But yeah. So favorite character, you're just going to basically sit out and say nobody. It was that bad. Which I think is, it's fair enough. You know, you can't really disagree with that entirely. What about you, Justin? Do you have a favorite character, dare I ask, first of all? And if so, who and why?
You guys already stole my favorite character and took it away from me. It was the doll. It was the doll. And then once you pointed out the logical inconsistency of its final line, I can't even like that. But I am just sitting there going, oh, thank God it's over. And thank you so much, doll. But no, I can't even say that.
Well, maybe you can find it interesting because you can write the entire backstory of how this doll became sentient and somehow was happy to end its life.
It was, you know, realized what? There's, it was in this movie.
Yes, it's a very self-aware meta doll. Well, it could be like the equivalent of like Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide, which is like, life is so crap. And then it got flushed out of the airlock and was like, yes, death at last.
So I'll go with my second favorite, which was Garrett. You know, I saw all the parts of her that at least called back to what she could have been. You wasted. I hated the Chaos Goblin part where she's running through the hall.
But she kind of takes that back immediately anyway. So.
I'll just stop.
Yeah, the chaos is my friends with benefits or whatever the thing that she said. Like,
I'm fine with that. That just makes her a very Kirk-esque captain in my mind. It's like, okay. It's maybe a rough way of putting it.
To me, it was like her letting Giorgio define who she was. You know? And that to me,
well, like I said, she does kind of go back on it, because when she's in the actual garbage hole, she's like, yeah, chaos goblin. No, I don't. I like science. I like order. Damn it!
She had very redeeming parts, yeah, for sure. And that was the only character that I could pick up, other than the doll, that I would give any sort of real credit to.
So I said more or less the same. I said, I've got written down Rachel Garrett, and I just said, it's at least they don't ruin her, and she gets to be a lone Starfleet / Trek voice in this mess. So yay. So Nita, do you have a favorite moment or scene? Again, do I dare ask? Is this going to be an answer of no?
No. I do like when Giorgio says, I'm not feeling motivated to be valuable to anyone but myself. I think that embodies what I would classify the true Giorgio nature, one that we got to know in Discovery. So okay. I like that they put that line in for her. I love the way she delivers her lines. They're always so intentional, and just you feel it. You feel what they're saying, and it's intense. And there's definitely an artistry to what these actors do. So that to me is a line that I think was notable. But again, so much more could have been done with, you know, the dialogue that was happening. Yeah.
So is that your favorite moment and a quote probably?
I don't know that it's my favorite moment, but it's definitely something she said that outstood for me. I think that one of my favorite moments was in the very beginning when the Section 31 guy walks in and she asks him what he's doing in her space station. And it's not really her space station, I love the ownership that she took of it. And she's all flashied up and dressed up and, you know, glammed up.
Drunk was her character. Yeah.
I love that. Enough. I like that moment when they first meet.
Yeah.
Because we're like you get the Giorgio that we learned about in Discovery.
Absolutely.
And that's the Giorgio that I like. I know that's terrible, but that is the Giorgio I like.
Yeah, that's fair enough. We're going in a bit of a messy order here, but just call it an homage to what a mess this film was. So Mary, you've already given us, we've had Nita's favorite moment and quote, so you've given us your favorite quote, which was meh. So do you have a favorite moment or scene that you could shout out?
Well, actually, there was one thing in really thinking about it, there was one, and I guess I would say this is a moment and the quote, because I felt like it was apropos for those of us who are in the United States.
Oh dear.
when Giorgio said there are no benevolent dictators.
And I thought that's right.
Because there were times, and I will say those were the Star Trek-y moments when we had like a single sentence or something like that. And it was like, oh, okay, there's Star Trek.
Yeah, for a second. So, anyway.
Yeah. Her acknowledging that I felt was actually quite powerful for her character and for everything in general.
Completely. It's kind of it's the moment that she kind of takes responsibility for quote unquote creating San as well, which is kind of like, I'm so sorry, I basically did this to you and I was wrong to do it, you know. So I got
right, right, right. So, anyways, that I did find that like exchange between them, and he's trying to like justify like how he's going to be like a good person, and she's like, no, you can't do that, because we know, like the audience knows, that power like that corrupts. It doesn't matter, it corrupts. And so I felt like that was actually a very strong, and I should probably have taken this all back, but it's taken me until now to really think through all of this stuff as we've processed through. So thank you for giving me this therapy, guys, to find something actually genuinely really good about this movie, and it was this moment.
It took about 3 seconds, but it's there. So there we go. Okay,
so Justin, I appreciate that.
Justin, why don't we ask your favorite moment and quote? We may as well get them both out of the way.
My favorite moment, and I guess you could call it a quote, but there's actually no dialogue, is when Giorgio interrogates Pell. was it Pell? The scientist from the Mirror Universe.
Dadano.
Dadano, that's right, sorry. Okay, when she interrogates him and she just closes him for that whisper and tells him what she did, and you know, we're all left going, well, what did she do? But it's enough to get this guy to just immediately turn into a coward.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, like, that was probably one of the best parts for me in Giorgio's character. It was very on point. But, there's so much, just so many problems. I can't really say much beyond that. Favorite quote was a silent part. There you go.
Fair enough. I mean, I said much similar to you, Mary, I think. My favorite moment was like the Sahara and Giorgio moment, where they actually have quite the touching discussion about, like, you know, would you destroy the dictators? And you know, then I'm glad I knew you. Again, I think it should have ended with Giorgio's sacrifice, but it didn't. So meh. I have a couple of quotes that I have as my favorite for different reasons. First of all, I actually did like the exchange between Giorgio and Garrett and found it, you know, actually amusing, where Giorgio says, "I dislike you less." And Garrett replies, "Oh, if I wanted someone to like me, I'd get a dog. I like order, I like prediction and conclusion." And she just responds, "Then you're on the wrong team." That was, fair enough. And just for the fact that it kind of made me giggle at the time, and it's also a very meta, perfect summation of the film. I also love the line, "Plot missile lock, we have trash, all right? Just trash." That should be the tagline of the movie, basically. So we have just remaining then to give our conclusion and a score out of 5 stars. I feel there are not going to be many stars in the sky tonight, but we'll still see. We'll start with you, Nita. Do you have a conclusion and a score, please, for us?
One. I can't give it any other score. It's just a waste of opportunity, just very wasted opportunity to make a really good Star Trek streaming movie. And I think they missed the mark.
That's fair enough. What about you, Mary? Do you have a conclusion and a score out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 2 because I'm going to refer back to my written comment that I said. I appreciate that it's tried. I think Star Trek needs to try and do different things. But this just was not it. There were just too many things that made it feel out of place, out of universe, just wrong. And I don't like being gatekeepy. I actually really dislike when fans get gatekeepy about stuff. But there are things that make Star Trek Star Trek, and there are things that make Star Wars Star Wars, and there's stuff that makes Marvel Marvel. And I didn't see Star Trek in this. So I'll give it a 2 for trying.
I don't think it's gatekeeping in this instance. I think it's just a question of you're left wondering why this could be a generic, this storyline could work anywhere, so why make it a Trek movie? And if you're left wondering that, then they're doing something wrong, I think. If it's not a story that could exclusively be told in Star Trek, then why tell it?
Exactly.
Anyway. Justin, conclusion and score, please, out of 5 stars.
So this actually might surprise you, but I actually give it a 2.5.
Okay.
So but it's not based on anything terribly relevant to the movie. It's actually more about the overall themes. You know, it could have been so good. And at the end of the day, even as much as I didn't like it, it's still Star Trek. You know, it's exploring it in a way I didn't appreciate, but it did give me one thing that no other Star Trek has given me, and it's that I get to finally join in and say this was awful. I always give everything the benefit of the doubt. I always fight out the other side, and this time I can't. I just can't look at it beyond there was potential, and they wasted it. So that's the nicest thing I could say. And the reason I give it as high a rating as I do, but it has nothing to do with the movie itself. So take what you will from that.
Wow. You see that Section 31? You pissed off the politest person in the group here. That's how bad you are. Anyway, yeah, my conclusion, I hate always saying this. I always say, like, the conclusion's very long, but in this case, it is quite long because I was using it to work out a lot of my feelings, as we kind of said, therapy-wise, so bear with me. I've said there's such a mess of ideas fighting for attention here that it's hard to figure out how to approach a conclusion, so bear with me while I wing it and hope for a semi-coherent end product, which fittingly feels exactly like what the writers of this film did. Firstly, the obvious, Michelle Yeoh as Emperor Jojo. On the surface, this may seem like an ensemble piece, but make no mistake, it's her film. She brings depth, kick-ass action, emotional vulnerability, and even a little bit of character development. I just really wish they would play down this hard-ass boogeyman image. A hero that eats eyeballs and might kill you at any minute has no place leading a Trek property, no matter how badass you might think that is. As for the rest of the cast, the film struggles to balance introducing and defining everyone, making it feel like Star Trek's answer to Suicide Squad. Unsurprisingly, there's plenty of cannon fodder, which is both necessary and disappointing. There are a handful of decent performances among the ragtag squad, but they're buried alongside some of the worst acting I've seen outside of an Ed Wood film. Indecipherable accents, generic tropes, over-the-top mugging, random screaming, and truly abysmal dialogue had me feeling secondhand embarrassment just watching. I won't delve too deeply into the plot because the writers didn't bother. Charitably, I can say it's fine if overly familiar. MacGuffins abound, canon is stretched, and overall, it just feels like a generic sci-fi action movie more than a Trek story. Something you might find on late-night sci-fi between episodes of Lex and Andromeda. Overall, it's, you know, this felt like table scraps, and I'm tired of not getting a decent Trek meal. It's blatantly a repurposed TV pilot, and the ending's hint at further adventures feels more like a threat than a treat. There's some good writing. Oh boy, that touched a nerve. There's some good writing at the personal character level, passable directing and effects what little there are, and a couple of interesting ideas, but it all gets bogged down by rushed pacing, bad dialogue, poorly conceived characters, and a general lack of ambition. It's fine, whatever. I left feeling more apathetic than viciously hating it, but Star Trek can and should do much better than this. And I also gave it 1.5 or 1.5 out of 5, which for me is just unheard
of. That's really low.
Yeah. So putting those scores together, dividing by 4 to give us an average, gives us the lowest score of anything we've ever reviewed. 1.75 out of 5 for Star Trek Section 31. And I think thoroughly deserved, to be fair, really, wasn't it? So, yeah. Anybody got any complaints about that? Anybody want to? You
know? No, I'm actually very glad that the rest of you drug the average down, because mine's probably unfair.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And that, my friends, wraps up our debrief. So on Star Trek Section 31, phew. Regardless of the end product, we've had a blast discussing it. I really have, and hopefully you've enjoyed listening. So huge thanks to my incredible guests, Nita, Justin, and Mary, for making this mission a success. We're going to go around and ask, where can people find you around the cyber subspace area, starting with you, Nita?
Okay, you can find me on Sci-Fi Queens, under Sci-Fi Queens on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, you name it, we're there, on YouTube as well. And our next episode will be this coming Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to be reviewing a sci-fi movie called Light.
Oh, okay. Cool. Just Light. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's called Light. It's on Tubi. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Great. And what about you, Mary? Did you want to shout out anywhere people can find you on social media or the like?
If they want to find me, I am on TikTok and Blue Sky under the name Flute Music, which is one word, but with a K on the music. And on Instagram, Flute Music, same thing, _ cosplay, because that's where I put my Star Trek stuff. I do have another personal one that's private with the same Flute Music, but I won't let you in because that's for family and friends and stuff. So, like, you know, people who want to see my cosplay will be sadly disappointed. So
that's where you really don't hold back on your true hatred of things. Mm-hmm. Your personal account. God, I hate to see if this has been you holding back. If this is you reserved.
Oh, I do not want to hang you. Actually, I don't talk about Star Trek on my personal stuff. And Facebook is not where I talk about Star Trek unless I'm just in a group and making comments on something. So, like, I don't post about it there. I post about that stuff on Blue Sky and TikTok mainly. That's where you'll really see stuff. And then also posting pictures of cosplay stuff on my cosplay thing.
That's cool. Yeah. You've got a lot of uniforms. I'll say that on your cosplay work. And
I love it. Yeah, I'm trying to get more.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay, cool. I'll wait to see. Cool. What about you then, Justin? Do you have anywhere people can find you online?
As I always say, don't.
Do not blame me.
I will add, if you desperately want to get in touch with me for some godly reason, I do read the boards on your on this podcast, and I have been in a couple episodes. So if you really need to speak to Justin, you can find me there. And likely you won't actually find me. I'll find you complaining about me. So go ahead.
I hope not. You've been a great guest. It's good to have you back again after quite a long absence. So that's been cool. And that's fair enough. Now, before we warp out of here, don't touch that communicator just yet, because in just a few weeks, Hit or Miss Who Trek is launching its first full weekly series of Doctor Who reviews, focusing on none other than the Doctor's most infamous screeching, plunger-wielding foes, the Daleks. Whether they're rolling menacingly down corridors or plotting universal domination, we'll be there to dissect every extermination. And don't worry, Trek fans, this isn't the end of our voyages. A brand new hit-or-miss Star Trek series is already in the pipeline for later this year, ready to beam into your ears with more deep dives and star-crossed shenanigans. And don't worry, almost everything we're reviewing will definitely be better than this. So if you've enjoyed this show regardless, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review. It helps more than a replicator on a caffeine run. Links to all of our socials are always in the link tree in our episode descriptions and flashing on screen if you're watching on YouTube right about now. Until next time, this is Captain Mike saying again, huge thank you to all of my guests. I had a brilliant time discussing something that wasn't brilliant, but at least we had a good time venting about it. And this is me signing off. And remember, even if this movie didn't understand the sentiment, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Oh.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, part of the Hit or Miss Who Trek channel. Hit or Miss Star Trek is hosted by Mike Wilson and DK. Behind the scenes and additional material by DK. Scripted, produced, and edited by Mike Wilson, based on an idea by Mike Wilson and Will Templar. Follow us on YouTube, your podcatcher of choice, and our social media. Links to all of these can be found by clicking on the link tree in the episode descriptions. This podcast is a Media Matters original production. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast throughout subspace. We'll be back for another thrilling trek through the stars soon, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
Try to warp out of here at once, maximum speed.